Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά.
Thank you very much.
For me, it came as a surprise to see that Imvros was never mentioned in relation with the Gallipoli campaign and the First World War. Your research proves the exactly opposite. Imvros play like a crucial role in these crucial days in 1915. Why we haven't mentioned this in the past, Jim?
It's a bit like the Lemnos story, like the Imbros story, and to a lesser extent as well, Tenedos, the other related island. Their involvement in Gallipoli is in the archives, it's in photographs and like. Over the years, the sort of focus is on, you know, the battles and the terrible costs, mm-hmm. so the cemeteries, and they're principally on the peninsula. That became sort of like the focus, I suppose, after the campaign came to an end and after the First World War. And the other involvement sort of became less mm-hmm. a focus. It's important to look in the archives and tell the story because this had Imbros had an amazing impact on a whole range of people who went there during the Gallipoli campaign, and it played an important part.
How Imbros was involved? I mean, it became Greek like only a couple of years before the beginning of the Second World War. Is that correct?
It was part of the whole, you know, mm-hmm. Admiral Kontoriotis and the Greek forces in the Greco-Turkish Wars in 1912, the liberation of Lemnos, Imbros, Tenedos, a whole range of other islands, Samos and more, and they were joined to Greece. And they had overwhelmingly Hellenic populations. We know from Australian soldiers, but also Ottoman archives, upwards of 90-95% of the population of Imbros was Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. So they were overwhelmingly Greek, and they were joined to Greece in 1912. Of course, they become involved in the Gallipoli campaign for the same reasons that Lemnos got involved. Mm-hmm. Venizelos, who was the prime minister at the time, was very supportive of the Allies, and he offered Lemnos as a base, as well as other logistical and other military support to the Allies. And in accepting that, in the sort of planning for the Gallipoli campaign, the Allies also occupied Imbros and Tenedos, which are, for your listeners, they're very close to the Gallipoli Peninsula.
But they didn't allow Greek forces to land on the islands. Is that correct? Didn't Venizelos offer, 100,000 Greek troops to go there?
You're getting into the whole issue of the Greek political disturbances that occurred. I mean, basically, many of your listeners may know, but there was effectively a civil war in Greece followed towards the end of 1915, 1916, where there was a major political dispute between forces supporting the king and the forces supporting Venizelos.
Yeah, the Great Division, as we call it.
Yeah, great Division, and you know, the army split in two, and there was fighting between the two forces. This is all through the early stages of, basically throughout the Gallipoli campaign. Venizelos offered troops, but then the Allies didn't accept them. They thought they had enough. Mm. But then even before they could reconsider that, Greece was convulsed with this military mm. conflict that wasn't resolved until sort of 1917, and Greece formally joined the Allies.
Yeah. If the Greek troops participating in the Gallipoli campaign, would the campaign have been successful?
Yeah, I suppose if they had offered 100,000 troops. Mm. I mean, the objection to the 100,000 troops came from the Russians. And that's the whole geopolitical conflicts to do with Russia and Greece and the like. Russia did not want to have any Greek troops entering Constantinople. They saw themselves as the sort of, you know, the mm-hmm. protector of Orthodox people throughout the Ottoman Empire. So there's all this sort of conflicts amongst the Allies. But I think if they were accepted, who knows what strategic differences that actually might have played, because these are speculations. One of the difficulties for the campaign was all the geography of the area, the defence of the area that had been going on for a while before the campaign even started, with mines, with trenches and the like. So, and artillery. Who knows? Maybe 100 may have made a difference, but maybe not at all. You know, mm-hmm. So it may have led to a lot more Greek deaths. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there were Greeks that did volunteer, served in the French forces. Mm-hmm. These were from Asia Minor, you know, throughout Greece, who volunteered and fought at Gallipoli. There were also, as I discovered in my Imbros research, there were Greek sailors who served on British merchant marine ships to do with laying mm-hmm. communications between the forces. Just as during the campaign, they were shot at and stuff like that. So there were Greeks serving on those ships, and I wrote an article about those. So,
do we know how many Anzacs landed in Imbros Island that period?
It's hard to tell, but it certainly it wasn't as large a base as Lemnos. Lemnos was a major, hospital and rest place. It was the headquarters of the campaign. So the commander of the campaign, General Hamilton, he had his headquarters there. It was a major naval sort of, what would you call it? It was like called a roadstead. So ships would go to Gallipoli, come there. They did the refuel, refit, and then they go on to Lemnos, Tenedos, or further on. So it was a major naval base. It was also the main aircraft base. So there was an air force that was supporting the troops on land, and they were largely based on Imbros. There were two airfields, and that's actually probably its major contribution because that provided intelligence. There were photographers. And one of the great discoveries of my research was I discovered that there was a British Royal Naval Air Service officer, his name was Bill Pollard, who was a photographer. He flew over Gallipoli and took photographs. Because being a photographer, he took lots of other photographs, and he took hundreds of photographs of Imbros and other places that he visited in Greece.
Flying above the island.
Walking around the island. Mm-hmm. Because he was actually a proper photographer, his photographs they're well composed. He also had a developing area so he could develop his photographs. What was fortunate for me was I managed to discover where those photographs or where high-resolution images of those photographs were kept in England, and I contacted that institution. It was the First World Aviation Society, and they agreed to allow us to use the photographs for our exhibition and for my book.
Yeah, there was an exhibition earlier this year with the Imbrian community of Melbourne, and I've seen these photos. It's really great quality, and there are many of them. There are like dozens.
There are hundreds of them. They're really they're the only photographs of the cemetery. There was a cemetery on Imbros where Allied soldiers were buried, and he has photographs not only of the cemetery but of a burial. The people buried there were then relocated. The remains were relocated to Gallipoli, but there was a cemetery there. But I suppose I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. I should say that my connection to the island goes back to my research to do with Lemnos, but then I went over to Lemnos in 2015 for the centenary of Anzac. But what I wanted to do before I went to Lemnos, I went to Imbros. I knew a little bit about it. I didn't know as much as I know now. Mm-hmm. And I walked around to see whether some of these areas that had some resonance with 1915. And that really moved me. One, I obviously, I met members of the Greek community that were in Imbros, in Aethiodoru and some of the other villages, Shinudi and various other places. I could see places that had not changed since 1915. There's some famous sort of archaeological medieval Byzantine ruins, and they're the same as they were when they were photographed by Charles Bean in 1915, the Australian military journalist. That really inspired me, seeing all that, because, wow, this place is a bit like Lemnos in terms of all these things can still be seen. If you know the story, these things are still there. So I came back from that. I wrote a story about walking on Imbros. And that really sparked my interest. But, I was doing a lot of work on Lemnos, as you know, with the statue and to do with the book I wrote about Lemnos and the Lemnos Gallipoli Committee that I'm the secretary of. 3 years ago, George Zenos from the Imbrian Society in Melbourne contacted me, and he'd been along to see some of our Lemnos things, and he asked me, was there any way of telling a story about his island and Gallipoli? And mm-hmm. I thought that'd be really interesting. And so for the last 3 years, I've been sort of researching it. And that's how, during that period, I discovered the Pollard photographs. But then I just started reading more and more letters and stories. There's as much richness to the Imbros story as there is to the Lemnos story. And particularly for me, if I can just say it, what really gets me is the interaction of the locals with these new visitors and the way the visitors talked about the locals in their diaries, letters, and things like that. So that, to me, is like it's a connection between not just Australia, but obviously Britain and other places, but Australia and another Greek community, and a Greek community that has representatives here in Melbourne. Their story is a very different story to other Asia Minor stories because, of course, they were exempted from the exchange, but then things were made difficult and a lot of them left in the 60s and 70s. There is still a community. When I was there, it was 300 in winter. Now I'm told it's 600, 700. A lot of
almost doubled.
A lot of Greeks moved there during the crisis, and there's various reasons how they're able to. Like the community on Tenedos, the local authorities, they encourage during the Panayiri time, they encourage people to come from Greece and beyond the diaspora to come to the island. So I thought really the Imbros story is another way of bringing tourism to the island and bringing money, I suppose, to the island to make it viable. It's also for everyone on the island because it's estimated upwards of 100,000 people go to Gallipoli throughout the year. None of them, as far as I know, come to Imbros. Wouldn't it be great if 10% of them came to Imbros? That'd be good for everyone working on the island, living on the island.
It's great because there is another connection between the Greeks, the Hellenists, with the Australians, which is pretty amazing for our culture here and our mutual history. Are you planning to do any presentation of the book so people like to get to know you and the book and they can purchase it?
When we had the launch of the exhibition at the Imbrian Society earlier in the year with June, but what we plan to do is show the exhibition in various places around Victoria, but also interstate. The display panels that we produced, they are the best sort of display panels that I've been involved in. The layout is beautiful, and George had a big role in the layout, George Zanos from the Imbrian Society. We're going to have them in various locations yet to be announced. We're hoping there's a few places, but certainly the Hellenic Club in Canberra is going to have them, and we're talking with Brisbane, we're talking with Sydney, talking with Adelaide and other places in Melbourne. We want to do a launch of the book, and really the thinking would be that we're talking with the Greek community about doing something at the centre, or maybe even in Moorabbin at the town hall, because the Imbrian community is based in that area. So over the next couple of months, we have to have the launch of the book, and I'll certainly do a presentation about the sort of the role of Imbros. This is also a story that's not so much appreciated. Well, it may not be appreciated by people in the Greek community, but also by the wider Australian community. When I write these stories, I try and find things that would resonate with non-Greeks, Australians, because, for example, there was a famous book that was published in 1916. It was a bestseller. It was called The Anzac Book, and it was stories told, written, a contribution from the soldiers at Gallipoli. They were put together by Charles Bean, and it was published. It was a bestseller. It was like so allowing the relatives and friends of the people that were fighting at Gallipoli to connect with the story, with their stories and their experience. And what happened was that was a bestseller. That book was compiled on Imbros. There was a place there where all the journalists were based on Imbros. So Charles Bean was there, Philip Schuller, all these famous Australian journalists who Australians who are interested in Gallipoli would know, but they wouldn't know that the book was compiled there. That's a great story. The other thing is that for British people, there's a famous poem, and I use that phrase, the title of my book, I took it from it's a phrase from a poem called From Imbros Over the Sea. It's a poem by a famous British soldier who was at Gallipoli on Imbros, who was classically trained. He wrote a poem called Stand With Me, Achilles. And the thing with the poem is that he wrote it while he was on Imbros. It's one of the most famous war poems from the First World War. In this account that I read about his experience on Imbros, he stayed in a hotel in the main city called Panagia. He boasted about how last he was able to speak, the language of Homer to people. He was speaking Greek. Obviously, he'd be trained in classical Greek. But he was able to communicate with the locals, and he found that really exciting. So for British people interested in Gallipoli or with a connection to Gallipoli, here's this famous British poet who was also a soldier. He wrote this famous poem, and what I'll just say what it was about. It's really quite moving because it's where a soldier, he doesn't want to go back to he's a bit scared about going back into the front. So he wants Achilles to be with him, and of course he has to go back, and he does go back. It's a great resonance between Hellenic civilization and the modern world and Western civilization and the stories of Homer.
Jim, where someone can find your book?
There's a web link. They can contact me if they like, and I can put them on to George. My email is jimclaven, one word, JIMCLAVEN, @yahoo.com.au. If they send me an email, or they can contact me by phone, 0409-402-388, and I can put them in touch with the Imbrian Society and they can order a book. So what we're doing is there's pre-orders at the moment, about to put in an order for a number of copies of the book. So if people are interested, I think they'd like it. The book is just over 130 pages, I think, 80 photographs, and includes not only archival photographs, but it's got photographs when I was there on the island in 2015. It's a really interesting story. It's another aspect of the sort of connections between people. Obviously, it was important for the Gallipoli campaign as well, and I tell that. There's some famous Australians were there, and it was involved in the campaign from February, before the campaign even started, before the landings. In February, there were Allied ships harbouring off Imbros. It was still occupied by the Allies. It was still involved in the First World War right up until the very end. There was a famous battle there in 1918 as well, so a naval battle. So it's an amazing story, and it'd be lovely for both everyone to read it, but also for the Imbrian community here and the Imbrian community on Imbros as well. Yeah. So,
Jim Claven, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Pano. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν? Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.